Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
At this time, we have Simone Levine, Executive Director of Courtwatch NOLA, and Veronica Bard, Project Director of Courtwatch NOLA. They issue an annual report. They just issued theirs this week, and they join us to talk about that. Welcome, ladies.
Thanks so much, Noel. Such a pleasure to be with you on the show again. So sorry it's not in person.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit different doing it this way, but we appreciate it. We have you guys on a couple of times a year and always as a result of your report. So let's get into the report.
It's hard to not be in front of your smiling face, Noel, I have to admit.
There you go. So let's get into the report because we have limited time here. So what is it that was the issue that y'all found the most troublesome maybe or the most problematic moving forward?
You know, there's so many really, you know, that we have to talk about. But I think that one of the issues that we are the most concerned about is the fact that we're involved, not we, but the city of New Orleans is involved in a whole lot of litigation. There's been a lot of civil rights lawsuits that have been filed against the judges, against our prosecutor, and we're seeing that they're not complying with those lawsuits, and that's public money. That's taxpayers' money that is really being paid in order to defend those lawsuits. A lot of the judges' lawsuits, the district attorney's lawsuits have been appealed unsuccessfully. They lost the appeal. That's all public taxpayer money that is being used for that. And still we're seeing that they're not complying with those lawsuits. And so that's one of the things that we saw specifically around fines and fees and around bail and bond. There's been some simple requests and demands that have been made by federal court judges of our local judges, simply that they need to ask about affordability before they impose these fines and fees, and they're still not doing it. That's what Courtwatch NOLA has found. And, you know, there's been about three decisions that have been filed against them for it. So specifically, we found that with Magistrate Cantrell, 73% of the observations that he failed to ask about affordability of bail and bond. Just a simple question he asked to ask in court, but it was not asked. And in 39% of all observations in which a fine or fee was imposed, our felony court judges did not ask about affordability. If we can't get out of these lawsuits, we're going to continue to pay for these lawsuits. And that's really problematic.
Inquired of the judges why they, if they are required by law to do that, why they're not doing it?
You know, I think that there's been a hearing. You know, certainly we've talked to individual judges about it. You know, I think that individual judges sort of just tend to forget about the whole entire process. And, you know, there's a whole long court day, but I think that they're going to continue to be locked in these lawsuits if they're not really strict with themselves in ensuring that they ask these questions. These lawsuits are not going away, and in fact, there's more that are being filed. We see ourselves as sort of an intermediary between a lawsuit and the activity that we see in court. If we had judges that listened to us in the first place, if they looked at the recommendations, which we've researched with best practices, we don't think that these lawsuits would actually occur. And, you know, and that's true for the prosecutor. That's true for our judges. And, you know, as you know, and I think you've talked about a lot on the show, I think we're in the 8th year of our consent decree with the police department and the 7th year of our consent decree when it comes to the sheriff's office, all costing taxpayers money.
Yep. So have y'all approached the Louisiana Supreme Court, and have they reacted to this?
We send our report to the Louisiana Supreme Court. We have folks that we talk to in Louisiana Supreme Court about our report. In fact, I'm going to let Veronica talk about one of the facets of our report last year that the Louisiana Supreme Court did act on. Veronica, do you want to talk about the false lab reports?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Last year we recommended that we actually found that the criminal district court was not using confirmatory tests on their drug tests as a matter of policy. It was costly for them to do. They would have to send those results off. And as a result, defendants were being jailed on drug screens, which are a much wider net cast rather than the confirmatory tests. The Louisiana Supreme Court actually acted very swiftly and issued an order statewide that requires every single drug court in Louisiana to use confirmatory tests according to best practices, and that was solely because of our recommendation in our report.
So they did take action in that case, but, you know, in these other cases, you've talked about this, Simone, for a couple of years now, actually, even during the pendency of this, in advance of the litigation, during the pendency of the litigation, and now, and but we still don't see any action by the Supreme Court relative to these courts across the state, if this is in fact required by law?
I don't think that it's required by law that you have confirmatory drug tests.
I'm talking about the other issues that we were talking about.
Oh, the other issues. Yeah, I think that that's important. I think that there was a number of advisory opinions that have been issued by our Supreme Court in the wake of COVID-19. And I think that those definitely provided guidance. But I'll be honest with you. I'm not really sure. You know, there's a lot of independence of local courts, and the Supreme Court can issue guidance. But what happens, and I think that is oftentimes problematic, is that you have individual actors in these courts that really act individually. So, for example, you have 13 separate judges that are in criminal district court and magistrate court. All of them are elected. And, we oftentimes hear when you go into their court that, that they act like the king or the queen of their own courts and that they set their own rules. In order for the decision making, a final decision to be made in the court, it has to be a decision that's made by all of the judges together. And oftentimes, that's the reason why we don't see sort of the unanimous nature of a decision that really has to be made. And we suffer. We suffer as the public. CourtWatch NOLA in this report looked at victim rights pretty intently. We spoke to a number of not-for-profit groups that work directly with victims and who we see as really allies in the process. And one of the issues that we saw was there was a new law that was put into place where individual defendants who are charged with domestic violence are required to transfer a firearm to the sheriff's office during the pendency of their case. And we saw that judges were actually not asking about that firearm. In fact, and it's been, we thought, a program that the sheriff put into place well, and that in, I think it was, 70% of the observations that we made, the judge did not ask about firearm possession at those bail hearings for domestic violence cases. So we looked at that when it came to victim rights. And then we also looked at the treatment that that domestic violence victims were receiving when it came to the prosecutor. Specifically, we had seen that the prosecutor had asked for our prosecutor, District Attorney Canavero, had asked for $400,000 in order to cover his legal bills for all the litigation that he has fallen into when it comes to victim treatment. And, you know, what we're really seeing is that oftentimes crime victims are just not listened to. There was over 100 articles for the last 3 years about our district attorney incarcerating crime victims. And still, in our report, we reported that 8 crime victims the district attorney's office attempted to incarcerate just purely because they failed to come to court to testify against their aggressors. So, you know, the case that
you don't think the community at large is a victim as well? Because I looked at those cases. Those are very egregious cases where the perpetrator not only abused the victim, but really is a dangerous criminal that shouldn't be out on the street. And oftentimes, as you well know, the victims play the system. And the problem with that is we have someone that's incarcerated. We have to move the case along because they have a right to a speedy trial. We can't keep them in jail forever. But by the same token, to issue an instanter subpoena or some other means, and I saw in the report that you referred to that as incarceration, and I would adamantly disagree, trying to compel a victim to come. You filed the complaint in the first, right? And trying to compel somebody to come in to get this very dangerous individual off the streets.
Mm-hmm. Well, so
I think that protects victims. I mean, we're not suggesting that he's never going to date another woman again, are we?
I would push back in saying that victims play the system. I think that each individual victim is different, and I think each individual.
Well, I don't mean every victim. I'm saying there are victims that play the system. I worked in the system for 40 years. I know. I've seen it.
I think that the bigger concern as far as people playing the system are insiders, so the public officials playing the system, as compared to outsiders that oftentimes don't understand the system and don't really know the system. We found that the 8 crime victims.
In what way are public officials playing the system? Explain.
Well, we just talked about it. You know, I mean, one of the ways certainly that public officials can play the system is the way that District Attorney Cannizzaro did by issuing documents that look like subpoenas that said subpoena at the top and that were not signed by a judge, but instead was signed by assistant district attorneys threatening to jail or fine crime victims to force them to come to court to testify. I mean, that's certainly a great example. But going back to crime victims themselves and the trauma that they face, the cases that we found was that there were eight cases where crime victims, the district attorney attempted to incarcerate. 7 of them were domestic violence victims. And so while I agree that oftentimes defendants are a risk to public safety, a lot of the times when it comes to domestic violence, those aggressors are an extreme concern and threat to public safety of that one individual. And we found in a number of those cases that the defendants themselves were out of jail, but that the district attorney was seeking to incarcerate these crime victims. One of the crime victims that they sought to incarcerate was incarcerated for 3 days. That's also in a
but
domestic
this,
violence
this is
case.
What I don't understand. You say incarcerate. When there was an instanter subpoena and court subpoenas issued in every one of those cases but one, a material witness warrant. You don't arrest someone on an instanter subpoena. I'm looking at your report. This is what you have.
Yeah, there were 2 instanter subpoenas that we found. The rest,
right, but an instanter subpoena,
instanter
subpoena does not require the attachment of a body.
That's the result incarceration. It certainly can. In this circumstance,
it can if the judge decides if they don't show up in court on the date of the subpoena, that could be one of the sanctions, but that's not a DA decision. So when you sit there and say that the DA tried to incarcerate, that's not a fair representation at all. I know because I delivered subpoenas in New Orleans for 3.5 years as part of my duties down there. I know all about the bench warrants, the alias capiuses, the at-large capiuses, the instanter subpoenas, how that works. That's not an attachment of a body. You have one material witness warrant in this report that you have that was issued. So to say that the DA tried to incarcerate these witnesses is misleading. It's a lie. That's not true.
In fact, what they did was they requested the instanter subpoena. That's what the district attorney did.
And that's what he's required to do under the law.
And then when the individual did not show up, they asked for the capias. And in one circumstance, not a material witness
because
warrant.
Because that's the only option he has.
Right. But to say that it's not true that they requested it, they did request it. Then they requested that the individual be arrested when they did not show up to court, and that individual was a victim. And so it is, in fact, true that they did request the incarceration of crime victims. Now, we can argue what is the mechanism that would cause that. However, it's still an attempt to incarcerate the crime victim, and 7 out of 8 of those cases were domestic violence cases. And we have to start listening to crime victims. We have to understand what is going to make crime victims feel safe. We have to understand that there's a different point of these cases than to just get the case finished. We need to start listening to crime victims about what is going to make them safe, what resources they need in order to get out of that relationship, in order to not call
and
the police.
I guess I don't disagree.
The police resources.
I don't disagree with you there, Simone, but there are not many options that the system has in place. The city of New Orleans has woefully underfunded the criminal justice system.
Agreed.
Woefully. We're off and running, creating new departments in the city and trying to be all things to all people. And the basic necessities of what makes a community work efficiently and effectively, we've underfunded every single last one of them.
And I think that we're funding them wrong. And I think that you and I agree on that.
And we have several times. But the fact of the matter is that leaves very few options for those within the criminal justice system to try and get these cases completed, because meanwhile, there's a defendant sitting in jail.
But that's my point, Noel. I don't think that the point of this process should be to get the case completed. I think that the point of this process, or why
well,
do we
how do
have
you preserve the
justice
constitutional
system?
Rights of the defendant? They have
how
that obligation as well as a constitutional officer.
How do we make crime victims safe? Are we listening to them? And a great example is another issue that we brought up in the report, which is bail hearings and the fact that there has been no concerted effort. And we do lay the blame at the feet of the district attorney's office, but also at the feet of the police department as well in the system as a whole. We don't engage crime victims initially and early on in this process. Who is the individual that knows if the defendant is at risk of public safety the most out of anybody, if there's a victim in the crime? It's the victim. Is the victim brought to the bail hearing? Is the victim engaged by the police department? Is the victim engaged by the district attorney's office early on in the process? Do they know where they're going? Has anybody told them where the bail hearing is?
You'll never accomplish that in the short time period that you have to bring someone before a magistrate to get bail set, to pull victims into the system. Not the way that it's financed right now. No way, no how.
Maybe
they can't
not
do
the
it.
Way that it's financed.
And the district attorney doesn't even waste his time going to the bond hearings because they have a matrix that they use and utilize as a court by court rule that doesn't even take into consideration some of the testimony to be offered by either the police or the DA in this case.
You know,
and that has been talked about in article after article after article. I mean, it's easy to object to a practice of the district attorney, but the fact of the matter is there's inadequate funding. They don't have the people there. In fact, when I first started in the sheriff's office in 1977, I worked in magistrate court.
Mm-hmm.
I know the inner workings of magistrate court, and it hadn't changed much. And
right.
I'm going to tell you, the opportunity to get victims there, where it would be statistically significant that victims would show up at that hearing, not very high. The system is not set up for that.
We started talking to the police department about it because, you know, really, at the end of the day, Newell, people have to start listening to each other. And, you know, the police
They're on a 20-call backlog.
the police department was pretty open and receptive.
Of course they're open. They're not going to be opposed to it. Everybody would love to do it, but when you try to weave it into an organization operationally, it's not going to work.
Open to the idea of just when they're giving paperwork out to crime victims at the scene of the crime, informing them that there is a bail hearing. And this is where the bail hearing might happen. The problem is that unlike other courts in the rest of the country, we don't have a phone number that people can call to find out when the defendant is up on the bail hearing so individual victims can actually show up. But the fact it doesn't take $1 million in order for the police department to issue a paper to a crime victim or to tell a crime victim where the bail hearing is.
I get it and I understand what you're saying, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying operationally, that's maybe a bridge too far for this system right now. We have difficulty getting an indigent defender lawyer to magistrate court.
Restructure the system, Noel.
So, I mean, I just don't see any of that happening, and I don't see the will of this administration to fully fund it because we're not fully funding any department. Name a department that's adequately funded.
Certainly crime victims are getting the end stick of that. I don't want to leave on
a negative note because I actually enjoyed reading the report. I thought it was very, very well done. I thought it was laid out really nice for those folks. Real quick, tell them where they can get a copy of this report.
Oh, www.courtwatchnola.org. Is that all the time we have with you, Noel? We enjoyed these too much.
That is it. We got a lot to talk about today. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Simone Levine and Veronica Bard, Executive Director and Project Director with Courtwatch NOLA. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.